I had to face the music. I had to face the music and not run away. I had to be able to face my failure in the public in order to know that I still had dignity. It was the dignity of Jesus Christ that I found, not certainly my own dignity, which was now as filthy rags. And this part of the story tells you, the part of the story that's coming up, the parable of the two ladies. So listen in. This is Colin Cook here, and How It Happens. Thanks for joining me today. You're listening to a broadcast on the good news of the gospel, which normally I take through the book of Romans. I'm on pause right now and sharing my story with you, which is sort of an illustration of the truths of the book of Romans. I hope you'll find it faith-training and uplifting. One Sunday morning, I told Sharon I have to go out. I have to go to a coffee shop or something and see if I can handle being in the public with all of this knowledge about me now, public knowledge. The Sunday Times of Reading, the Reading Sunday Times, had just published my story on the front page and four other full pages inside that newspaper. 25%, it was known that 25% of the public read that newspaper every Sunday. But the thing is, which 25% was it? Anyway, I went to a coffee shop. I think I had a hot chocolate or something. And as I was paying the cashier at the counter, I saw a family all turned, looking at me, and one or two whispering at the same time. It was extremely uncomfortable. And it was one more reminder of knowing that I could still stand in the dignity of Jesus Christ's righteousness, and certainly not my own. Experiences like this taught me more than ever the power of living in Christ's righteousness, counted as righteous when we're sinners, when not only we have no righteousness of our own righteousness is as filthy rags, but the public knows it is. And so this was a very, very telling experience to me. I continued to go to church and sit with my boys in the sixth row from the front, as I had always done. And one person said to me a year or two later, you know, it impressed me very much that you continued to come to church with your boys and you continued to sit there and attend the service. He said, I really appreciated that. You didn't hide away. You didn't escape. You didn't escape town. You didn't just go into oblivion somewhere. And yes, it was important for me. I had to do that, not only for my own dignity, but also for my children, my boys, and to know as well that church is about being counted as righteous, even when we are sinners. People did the usual shaking of hands, of course, after church, but I never knew how sincere some of the handshaking was. The good morning, how are you, the handshake, the smile, and then moving off to someone else. But there was a certain number of people that would shake my hand and with the other hand take my arm and say, you know, I know what happened, I've read the newspaper, but I just want you to know I still support you and God bless you. That meant more to me than anything, that affirmation from certain ones that assured me that I was still loved and cared for and accepted, even though I had embarrassed everybody and sinned. It was what partly was what kept me going, I think. But then let me tell you the parable of the two ladies. The parable of the two ladies. Now, this is not really a parable. It actually happened. And it happened on the same morning, the exact same morning. These two ladies appeared in my life. But their story is so meaningful and symbolic that I call it a parable. We had invited someone to our home, a friend of mine visiting Denver, and he was from Phoenix, Arizona, and he stayed at our house for the weekend. So he came to church with us and sat between Sharon and me, And the pastor, as usual, just before the sermon, would introduce everybody, would introduce the visitors, and invite the congregation to welcome them. So he would have everyone turn round and shake the person behind you, and shake the hand, rather, of the person behind you. Perhaps this person needed shaking rather than just her hand being shaken, but and shake the person to the right, shake the hand of the person to the right and left of you. So this visitor of ours and Sharon and I turned round to shake the hand of the person behind us. Behind us was this well-dressed, debonair lady and her husband, who, with pierced lips, shook her head from east to west, with her hands remaining in her lap, refusing to shake our hands. It was embarrassing for my guest, and embarrassing for me and Sharon. After the service, in the foyer, I talked to the lady. I said, "What was going on there?" And she said, "You know how I treat you? I treat you as if you didn't exist." Now, I'm not trying to tell a hard luck story here. I could handle that. But I'm simply trying to tell you how some people handle other people's sins. They ignore them. They treat them as if they didn't exist. It was the epitome of legalism. It was an enormously interesting and beautiful, not beautiful, interesting and tragic parable of legalism. Now, in that same foyer, almost within 10 or 15 minutes, there was another lady looking rather ragtag. She was somewhat of a poor lady. She didn't dress herself well. Her coat was wrinkled. Her hair was somewhat unkempt. And she smelled of cigarette smoke, which was a real no-no in my church denomination, because you can't even be baptized and become a member of my church in those days when I was a member of that church if you smoked. But she smelt of smoke. Obviously, she hadn't overcome that problem. Obviously, she wasn't a member, I suppose. But she pushed a little envelope into my hands, which was as wrinkled as her coat, and in that envelope was a little note, and I think about $10 or $20 in the envelope. And it said something like this. I wish I had kept it. I probably have it somewhere, but I can't remember where it is. "Dear Brother Cook, we are all sinners, and we are all seeking to overcome. And God understands and loves us. And may God give you grace and courage," and something like that. Something like that. But it was a heart-moving letter. And what a contrast to the debonair lady, well-dressed, looking very sophisticated, who treated me as if I hadn't existed. Whereas this lady epitomized grace. The other lady represented law. This lady represented grace. How could she be so graceful? I suppose because she was receiving the mercy of God every day herself. She knew that she could not so far, or had not succeeded so far in overcoming cigarette smoking. She needed God's mercy every day, and because of that, she could apply that mercy to me. It was a very telling experience, and an experience I will never forget till the end of my days. An experience that was very, very sweet by the contrast of the sour lady that responded earlier. May the Lord have mercy on the sour lady as well, you know, and bring her to grace too. One of the ways that the Lord affirmed me also and kept assuring me that I could hang on to him and trust in his mercy and Christ's righteousness for me was that one of the reassuring things that he gave me was that he still gave me people to help who came into counseling. I had now accepted more careful boundaries, and they received help from me. They clearly experienced grace from the Lord, a turning away from a number of their addictions themselves. And it struck me, how, God, can you use someone who has failed you, who has embarrassed the cause, who has been a sinner, who has rebelled, who has not done things right. How could you possibly use someone like that? But once again, it was a further testimony that God uses broken people for his missions. He has no one else to use anyway. The ones who think they are not broken are, of course, simply deluded. I stayed in church for a couple years, and of course, I had been removed from church office. I was not disfellowshipped from the church organization. Denomination, but I was removed from church office. And after 2 years, I asked for a reconciliation meeting. Nobody had a clue what that was. It wasn't done in our church. If somebody sinned publicly like that, I suppose they just disappeared and went off to another congregation somewhere else, and that's how it was dealt with. Nobody attempted to reconcile sinners to God's grace or to the church. But I had read about it in a book. I'd read about it in a book written by a pastor of the Presbyterian Church. One of his co-ministers, co-pastors, had committed adultery with five women in his congregation, and he was determined to reconcile that person to the heart of to the church. I asked for that to take place. They didn't know what it meant. So I bought 12 of these books, and I gave each one to the one to each of the board members, the 12 board members of the church, asked them to read it, and then asked them if they would perform this service for me. They finally agreed. We had the reconciliation service, but I have to say, it wasn't really, the spirit of it wasn't really understood by that congregation, and so it was a rather solemn and sad service, and Sharon, of course, was still very, very devastated by the whole experience, and it just did not have the element of joy to it, but it did make a point that a sinner could be reconciled. And so, will the church ever come up to where Jesus wants us to be, where they can reconcile sinners? Or do we just look to churches that have lots of moral people in them that need no reconciliation? That's a question not simply for the church, but for the heart of every one of us. As you can imagine, it's not easy for me to tell this story. It's not easy because it's embarrassing, it's humiliating, it's, well, it's just not easy to tell, as you can imagine. And yet I tell it because I want to be real. I don't want you to put me on a pedestal. I don't want you to think that I am righteous. I want you to understand that what I have been teaching about God counting us as righteous when we are sinners is the truth of my life, and I hope you will therefore see it as the truth of your life, that you will see meaning in the book of Romans more clearly now than ever because of the story that I am telling you. I would like to hear from you. I'm not making an appeal for a donation here. I would just like to get a note from you. Even if it's a note where you just have lost all confidence in me, even if it's a note that says I'm not going to listen anymore, or it's a note that says I still believe in what you're doing, please keep going. I will keep going anyway because I believe in it, and I believe that God wants me to do this. But it is very reassuring and very helpful if I hear from you. So please, if you'd like to write, then a simple note, then write to FaithQuest, P.O. Box 366, Littleton, Colorado, 80160. Littleton, Colorado, 80160. Or if you'd like to send me an email, send it to faithquest@fastmail.net. That is faithquest, FAITHQUEST, at fastmail, FASTMAIL.net. Thank you very much, and I'll see you next time. Cheerio, and God bless.